Hi, this is Sid. Today's cut is from my CD, Streets and Alleys. Learn more at my website, sidlieberman.com.
By sophomore year, I felt as if I had begun to belong. With five roommates, I took a four-bedroom suite at the top of Leverett House, a sprawling suite. It had gabled eaves. It made the room seem as if it were something out of a novel. And my life began to seem like something out of a novel, too. I'd closed a chapter on the Jewish boy growing up in Chicago and opened a more sophisticated chapter, filled with weekly visits to the master's house for sherry, glee club concerts, the Harvard band playing on Saturday mornings, marching through the square. I'd become part of the Harvard landscape that had once been Emerson's and Thoreau's and Kennedy's. I imitated my professors, and on blustery fall mornings, I strode through the yard, just wearing a sport coat for protection, my tie blowing over my shoulder into the wind. I participated in torturous philosophical discussions at the Blue Parrot, a 60s coffee house where you could sip espresso and listen to Bach. I wrote countless free verse poems on the banks of the Charles River. In other words, I'd become completely sophomoric. My feeling became disdain for my courses. I took Italian, Dante's Inferno. I figured I could read it in translation. How would the professor even know? I took History of the South because former students called it a gut, an easy course. They nicknamed it Mint Julep. I took English 10, a survey of English literature from the beginning to the present. I thought, what better than to become a dilettante? And the only one I was really interested in was constitutional law, and that was because it was going to be taught by a professor from the law school. Well, on the first day of that class, and by the way, we were in Sanders Theater, the site of my first orientation lecture. Only now I was brimming with confidence. On that first day, he announced that he was going to teach this class as if it were a law school class. He was going to expect us to be prepared, and he was going to ask us a question to start the class every day and have some intellectual give and take. I thought, prepared? Who does he think we are? We're undergraduates. We don't get prepared. We cram. I mean, freshman year, I had done 2 months of Italian in 1 week. Not well. After the exam, my teacher called me up and she said, you know that last translation you did on the final about the soldier in the graveyard? I said, yeah. She said, well, there was no soldier, no graveyard. Now, he arrived the next day in class. He asked this long, philosophical, hypothetical question fraught with nuance. Lots of implications in it. I didn't understand the question. Of course, I wasn't prepared. He took out his roll and he said, okay, John Adams. If John Adams were there, he wasn't going to answer. He said, John Adams doesn't seem to be with us. How about James Hertel? Well, James Hertel was inexplicably absent, as were the next eight people he called on. The ninth person was me. I looked around to find myself. Finally, he gave up after about 10 minutes of that, and he went to a more direct way. He said, you in the blue shirt. That fella began to look around as if his shirt had just turned white. He said, you right there in that blue shirt. The guy went, oh, me? He said, yes, stand up. Kid stood up. He said, well, what do you have to say? The student said, can you repeat the question? He repeated the question. He said, well, I don't know the answer. I didn't do the reading. That went on day after day. The professor's smile from the first day got sadder and sadder. His face was just infused with sadness. That class became known as the most popular class in the college because we had discovered that if you came early, you could go up into the Sanders balcony and lie on the floor. That way he couldn't call on you and you could still take notes. We used to line up to get into that class. Every day, the visible size of the class shrank. That balcony was wall-to-wall guys. It was hard to find a place. It was like some strange sleepover where you had to wear a tie and take notes. As the year progressed and the weather got colder, I donned a scarf. It blew over my shoulder with a tie, and I continued to stride thoughtlessly through the year. I mean, I had other things to do. I had to explore the North End of Boston. I had long philosophical discussions to have with my roommates over wine. And anyways, I was majoring in Adrian that year. We had gotten back together, and I spent a year writing her an epic poem. It took me 30 minutes to read that poem out loud. I read it to her on her birthday, by the way. It had lines in it such as these. And when we looked at each other, and the chandeliers crashed. I was a sophomore. And the mirrors cracked, and the music screamed, "I touched your hair." I had to write 4 research papers in 24 hours. 3 D's and an F. The South could have been a foreign country as far as I was concerned. I was lost in purgatory. I fell asleep more and more on the balcony of Sanders. And while English 10 raced through the centuries, I found myself out of breath. By the time I started to study, it was no use. English 10 was a perfect example. I began to study the night before the exam. I'd done maybe half the reading, so had my roommates. At 3 in the morning, we were giving each other spot quotes from literature, and we decided to quit at 3 in the morning because I read them the ingredients off a box of Kellogg's cornflakes. Jay said, wait a minute. That sounds real familiar. Isn't that what Gulliver took with him on his travels? He thought best to get some sleep. He woke me up early in the morning. He had rearranged the living room furniture so we had a running track and then thrown open the window so cold air was blowing in. As I ran, I thought I might be awake, but my mind was going to be woefully empty. Those midterm exams were my comeuppance. I felt like Robert E. Lee after the History of the South exam. In Italian, there was a passage to translate that I was sure was not in hell or heaven, let alone purgatory. In constitutional law, I'm sure I just snoozed through whatever material they put on that exam. In English 10, I had to use this shotgun approach, which is, when you don't know the answer, you write everything you do know so the professor will pass you. I really wanted to get home for Christmas. I wanted to just get out of there. I left depressed and dejected, and I was driving home. But somewhere around western Massachusetts, I began to feel good again. I thought, no one knows my grades. I'm a Harvard man. That's what counts. I began to sing Harvard fight songs, which are unlike any other fight songs you've ever heard. For instance, here's a snatch. With crimson banners waving neath the strains of victory, old Eli's hopes we are dashing into blue obscurity. Resistless our team sweeps goalward neath the fury of the blast. We'll fight for the name of Harvard until the last white line is passed. Harvard, 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 Harvard. What other school would rhyme victory and obscurity? Somewhere in New York State, I put my Harvard sweatshirt on, hoping to impress people at rest stops. It was around Buffalo I made a fateful decision. I could either follow the interstate down around the lakes and cut back up to Grand Rapids, Michigan, because that's where I was going. I was delivering a drive away to someone in Grand Rapids. My father told me he would pick me up even though it was 180 miles from Chicago. Or I could cut right through Canada on a 2-lane highway. I thought, I'm a Harvard man. Adventure. Right through Canada I went. It would have been a great decision, except I'd been driving all day. No radio. It had conked out. I was leaving a well-lit 4-lane highway to go on a 2-lane highway not well-lit, and it began snowing. I was fighting to stay awake. But like those teams in the Harvard fight songs, I struggled on. I rolled down my window. I slapped my cheeks. I decided to sing the entire score of West Side Story. Somewhere during Officer Krupke, I fell asleep. I found myself with my foot on the brake, my hands on the steering wheel, shaking in the middle of a field. If it had been a cliff, I would have been dead. As I backed my car back onto the road, I said to myself, you know, how dumb can you be? I was about to get my answer. We were outside a little town called Alomar, and I stopped at the first motel I came to. There was a little home being used as the office. I walked up, and I put my hand on the doorknob, and I went to open it, and suddenly it occurred to me, I didn't know whether they spoke English in Ontario. I looked at Harvard written in that window backwards. And to my chagrin, I thought, you know what? I can tell you who's on the eighth ring of hell. I can tell you Louis Niger's position on a couple of constitutional issues. I can tell you the rhyme scheme of a Shakespearean sonnet and what the carpetbaggers did to the South, but I didn't know whether they spoke English in Ontario. I went in. It was a little old woman's home. There were plants lining the window, a cat on a hassock. There she was, seated on an overstuffed chair, a sweater draped over her shoulders, tied by a little chain. She had on reading glasses and a book on her lap. I strained to see the cover, but she had it covered. I couldn't see what the writing was. I searched around the room to see anything written in English or French. Nothing. No clue. I began to panic. I thought, what French do you know? The only thing I could remember was from kindergarten, Frère Jacques. I knew there was a line in there with dormez-vous in it. I knew that had something to do with sleep. I thought maybe I'd sing it to her. Why had it never occurred to me to just ask her, you know, do you speak English? It never occurred to me. Anyways, this wasn't like rural France. This was Canada. She must watch television. She's running a motel. There have to be English speakers going through. But none of these thoughts entered this Harvard man's mind. She looked at me, expecting me to say something. I didn't know what to do, and so finally I looked at her and I said, me want sleep. I sounded like Tonto. Bed. She looked at me as if I were completely crazy. And she said, are you looking for a motel room? I played it off. Oh, yes. I said, yes, yes. I would like to sleep. I need a bed in a motel room. I tell you, I couldn't look at her while I signed in. I couldn't look at her the next day when I checked out. I drove that 180 miles. I was so embarrassed. I fought a snowstorm all the way, and I got there later than I'd expected. The first person I saw was my uncle, who had accompanied my parents up from Benton Harbor, Michigan, where he lived. He was chomping on a cigar. I said, Uncle Itchky. He looked at me and he said, don't Uncle Itchky me. He said, you had to drive here up to Grand Rapids? You couldn't fly home? You couldn't take a bus home? What are you, a dummy? There's a blizzard out. 16-wheelers are running off the road. Your father drove into a snowbank. We had to be towed out. Harvard man. My father said, just get in the car. I sat in the back with my mother. Every time he saw a jackknife truck on the way back, another phrase belched out of his mouth. Smart. Supposed to be smart. Harvard man. We had to drive to Grand Rapids to pick him up. My mother said, don't listen to him. The Liebermans are always yelling. She handed me a tuna fish sandwich. She said, eat. As I sat there eating, I felt less and less like a Harvard man, more and more like a little kid, a dumb little kid at that. I fell asleep. Somewhere south of the loop, I woke up, and instinctively I said, are we almost home yet? My mother just rubbed my head. She said, almost, go back to bed. I thought, yes, that's what I should do. I had a whole month where I didn't have to worry about being smart or being a Harvard man. I just closed my eyes and peacefully drifted off to sleep.
I hope you enjoyed listening. This story is distributed under a Creative Commons license, which requires attribution for all reproduction and prohibits commercial use. Find out more about me at my website, sidlieberman.com. That's SYDLIE berman.com.